Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/tripcast. Over 100,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
Texas Talking. What was that you said? Texas Talking. Gonna hoop up inside your head.
Hello and welcome to the Texas Tribune Trimcast. This is Jen Brown, Executive Director of Battleground Texas, the organization that is working to make Texas count nationally and to get all Texans involved by the time Reeve is old enough to vote. And now here's your host, Reeve Hamilton.
Thank you. This is Reeve Hamilton here with the Tribcast for the first week of March. And thank you to Shiny Ribs, a.k.a. Kevin Russell of, Shiny Ribs and the Gourds for that new intro music. It was very good. Joining me is executive editor Ross Ramsey.
Howdy.
Reporter Aman Bathija.
Hi.
And fellow reporter Julian Aguilar.
Hello.
Thank you all for joining us today. Let's see, what should we talk about first? Ross, why don't we start with you and the latest from the UT TT poll?
Well, we're in the middle of rolling this out. I guess the talker was the first one, was the Abbott versus Perry number that we put out on Monday among Republican voters. Perry's up about 3-1, 49% to 17%.
Is that a surprise?
You know, this is one of those, it comes around every time there's a poll. People who are not the governor don't have really great name ID. State officials, you know, they're statewide, they think they're famous, they've spent a bunch of money on TV, the voters voted for
them.
Talking
about Evan Smith?
Then they forget about him. not yet, not until he runs. But, you know, so they all have, you go to the voters and you say, do you have a favorable or unfavorable impression of them? And it doesn't necessarily mean they don't know who they are, but they don't have enough of an impression to really judge them. So a certain number of people know who Greg Abbott is, but a lot of people don't really have an impression of him. And that's, you know, where you step in with advertising and all of that, both on your behalf and where your opponent comes after you. So that's kind of where the movable piece of this is. People, everybody knows who Rick Perry is. Everybody has an opinion of him. Not everybody knows who Greg Abbott is. Not everybody has an opinion of him. And if they were to be in a head-to-head race, it would kind of be a race between Greg Abbott and Rick Perry to define Greg Abbott.
Right. So the number that Perry's at, that's sort of a less movable number than what Abbott's
right.
at, is what you're
saying. People have kind of decided about Perry. Mm-hmm. You know, if he decides to run in 2014, he will have been in office for 14 years. He's kind of a known quantity.
And the people that know Abbott, they like him more than the people that know Perry.
Yeah, and the people, you know, we asked another question that was kind of a solo question. If Rick Perry wanted to run again, would you vote for him? Didn't name another opponent. And, you know, about a third of the people said, you know, I'd wait and see. And the people who would wait and see, when you kind of dig into those numbers, have a very favorable opinion of Greg Abbott. Some of them have a favorable opinion of Perry, but they have a really favorable opinion of Greg Abbott. So,
do we know why they have, like, what Greg Abbott has done specifically that gives them this really favorable opinion, other than just being a charming guy?
You know, he's got relatively high name ID. If you're a Republican, he's been fighting for the things that you wanted him to fight for. He hasn't had, you know, there aren't any real flies on him at this point. You know, there's not been a big scandal or something gone wrong that would give people a negative impression. And importantly, he's never been, or he hasn't in a long time, been in a truly competitive race for office. So nobody's been throwing up ads saying he's a, you know, dirty so-and-so like they have against Perry, like they have against, you know, Dewhurst.
Well, and one more thing, the Ted Cruz campaign was a great advertisement for Greg Abbott.
Well, that's true.
Because Ted Cruz went around the state talking about all the work he did under Abbott and, you know, either explicitly or implicitly praising Abbott in every speech he gave.
And that seemed to work for him.
Yeah.
worked out pretty good, it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're really the guy that was at the head of all those efforts, then you should probably do really well. Isn't the thinking there?
He's a really good candidate against, you know, almost everybody in the Republican Party. But Rick Perry's been kind of unsinkable. And when you do these poll numbers and you look at it, it's like, you know, Perry's still pretty strong.
He's the Molly Brown.
And how many voters know about Rick Perry's Guitar Hero skills yet?
You know, I think if Greg Abbott gets a hold of it, it'll be a YouTube sensation, I'm sure.
That's a reference.
Maybe we should do that instead of a debate. How about
Joe Fuentes? Right. You got competition.
That's right. A reference to this picture surfaced of Rick Perry playing Guitar Hero, which is a video game with a young girl. And they both seem to be having a good time. He seemed to be winning. And the Joe Fuentes, the Harlem Shake video that Representative Fuentes did was terrible.
It was fantastic. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's the end of the current, you know, there's a version of Texas Weekly's newsreel up that's the end of it. It's just Well, it's a fantastic thing.
The Harlem Shake is a meme. It's a very stupid and easy meme to do, and they did it wrong.
But he looks so happy doing it.
No.
It's the best thing since Carlos Uresti's wedding dance video.
Don't get me wrong. His dance moves, both of their dance moves, Frias and Uresti's, are impeccable. But the construction of the video does not fit the mold of the meme, and so it was a failure.
Right. So to dramatically change the
You're like
subject.
Simon Cowell.
Exactly. He's going to listen to start crying like a.
This has gone off track. Let's talk about guns.
There are only a few things I really enjoy doing, and reviewing YouTube videos is one of them.
That's true. These guys
really
like
them. Let's talk about guns. The headline on the gun piece of this was that Texans are not as pro-gun as you might expect.
Well, I mean, they don't want to change the laws except in a couple of cases. And if you ask them, should we have background checks for mental health and criminality at all gun sales, including gun shows and private sales, they say, yeah, we should. And it's a pretty overwhelming number. They are still kind of out of, you know, as you would expect, Texas is still pretty conservative about assault weapon bans, semi-automatic weapon bans, magazine bans, all of those kinds of things, and kind of out of tune with the country in a way that you would expect. Texas is more pro-gun than the rest of the country. But when you asked them, when we asked them that background check thing, we got kind of an interesting result. The other thing that was interesting to me was their split just right down the middle on guns on campus. But they were in favor of allowing teachers to have guns in public schools. So,
teachers, you know, or like marshals?
Well,
like, you know,
the question was phrased teachers. So, you know, what do you think about letting teachers carry, you know, concealed handguns in public schools, or letting some teachers?
But not for guns on campus.
But guns on campus, they were split.
What if you changed it to professors? But they might not trust professors as much as they trust teachers.
Yeah, it depends on if they're in school or not. Whether they're, you know, am I flunking economics or am I doing all right?
The background check thing, that's what Commissioner Patterson's been talking about, right? Like when you go to a gun show, everybody gets a background check, but nobody knows if you bought anything at the gun show or not.
His version is that instead of having a background check for the sale of a gun, And so tying the record of the background check to that particular gun purchase, that when you walk into a gun show, you should say, hey, I'm going to buy a gun in here. And they say, just sort of generically give you a background check. You might not buy a gun, but you might buy a gun. But when you go to the seller, you say, here's my certification that I've got the background check. Hmm. And that way, the background check record is not tied to the gun record in a way that would let someone run your gun down, you know, run it back. So the way it was phrased for campus was guaranteeing the right of faculty, staff, and students to carry concealed weapons on college campuses. And it was about 48 in favor of that and 47 opposed to it.
Huh. That sort of surprises me.
The other question was allowing more teachers, kind of interesting, allowing more teachers to carry concealed weapons in public schools, 54% to 41%. So they like that idea.
Although students at college campuses, almost universally, except for, I think, A&M is sort of the exception to the rule, are pretty strongly opposed, at least the majority of them are opposed to guns on campus.
It's historically had a hard time in the legislature. Mm. I don't know what the chances are this time, but it's historically had a really difficult time.
Yeah.
There's a Dan Flynn proposal, a representative from Van, who he's proposed shrinking the time you would spend in concealed carry classes, reducing the existing requirements for carrying a concealed handgun. Was a loser in this poll, 30% for it, 59% against it.
So Texans are four people having guns, but they want them to be responsible and checked up on.
Well, right. They don't think criminals and people with mental health problems ought to have guns.
Texas is such a crazy state.
They're funny that way, aren't they?
Well, we're actually going to do a special podcast that sort of dives into the poll a little deeper. So I think we'll leave that there for now.
Okay.
If that's all right. And move
Absolutely.
On, stop speculating about future races, and move over to a race that we actually know the outcome of, which is the special election in Senate District 6, which Julian has been covering.
Yeah, that was it was pretty interesting. Saturday was down to current state rep Carol Alvarado versus former county commissioner Silvia Garcia, and 53-47 was the final outcome, 53% to 47%, 6.2% voter turnout, and I think out of more than 220,000 eligible voters
right.
in that district, about 18,000 ballots cast total. Mrs. Garcia is admittedly hamstrung. She said she can't do much. The bill filing deadline is obviously Friday. She cannot be sworn in until Harris County and the governor do their canvasses, which probably be
They're talking about speeding that up, right? So that she'll be in next week or something like
that?
Yeah,
I mean, she's actually in town, I think, this week.
Of course, the governor's schedule is super busy. Who knows when he's going to get a chance to go canvassing?
But she says she's been talking about the Sauter campaign with her supporters in the Texas House, which is kind of interesting. Representative Alvarado got a majority of the Houston delegation from the Black Caucus, and whereas Ms. Garcia got a lot of the Houston Latino Democrats. But, you know, after the morning after the election on Facebook, you know, Representative Farrar, who was one of Celia Garcia's initial supporters, you know, sent out a message to Carol, and it seems to be kind of a kumbaya moment where everybody's going to try to work together and move forward. So we shall see what happens. But she's been given interviews saying that she's going to fight, you know, Governor Perry's extremist agenda, and that's how she's viewed in the district, you know, as the left of center, the more progressive, the more grassroots. She has a lot of union support, and so that was that race in a nutshell. But
it was also a shadow fight, right? TLR and trial lawyers.
Mr. Mostyn backed Ms. Garcia.
So the trial lawyers, if you frame it that way, the trial lawyers beat the tort reformers this time.
If you frame it that way, sure. Yeah.
Well, is it a fair frame?
Some people would say, I think most of the people would make that assessment. You know, those both of those, you know.
Not Julian, though.
Well.
Other people.
Yeah, we just report on what other people say. We don't have our own opinions. But no, I think that's a fair assessment. You know, Mr. Mawson was there on Saturday night, and he said, you know, it's funny that they're sending out mailers, you know, saying, you know, Mawson supports Democrats. He's like, they're sending these mailers out to Democrats. He's like, you know, tell them it's probably not the best strategy. But like I said, it was divided. I actually had one member of the Houston delegation tell me, he's like, you know, if I'm going to get heat for supporting one or the other, you know, it's nice to get a mention. Apparently, I left this person out in the story. but, you know, and I won't say
and that. And you're leaving him out of the podcast. Right.
How do you know it's a hint?
We're going to continue to leave them out.
So you're narrowing it down.
So one of the things in this race was that, you know, it was difficult for candidates who agreed on almost everything to distinguish themselves. And what separated them? Was there something clear or was it kind of fuzzy?
There was. Well, Ms. Garcia said, you know, she's the true Democrat, obviously, because of the support that Representative Alvarado got from TLR and Senator Taylor was block walking for Burn Orange Report.
A group that, by the way, has also supported Garnet Coleman,
sure.
Ana Hernandez. I mean, you know.
That's Naomi Gonzalez.
Famous, right. Republicans.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Right.
And Mrs. Garcia, before the general election, which was January 26th, she sent out some mailers or some emails alleging that Carol was getting support from voucher school organizations,
mm-hmm.
Charter school organizations, and there was a little bit of a back and forth of that. So again, she tried to hit her on like she's the more conservative candidate. You know, I know SD6, I'm grassroots. But you're exactly right on women's issues. They agree on public ed funding. They agree. I asked them both early on about the gun situation. They said, you know, we have guns. We grew up hunting, but we respect them. We think they should be regulated. So you're right. And a lot of issues. I think they would have voted the same on a lot of these hot button issues, you know, mm-hmm. versus R's versus D's in general.
So a lot of it was just organization?
Yeah, I think so. And speaking of organization, Teresa Guerra was Ms. Garcia's campaign manager, and she was also Senator Davis's campaign manager and Chris Turner's campaign manager. So she is emerging as sort of a quiet force.
Kind of on a run.
Yeah, mm-hmm. behind the scene. You know, she's a lot of people were talking last night at our Tribune event just about her, and she, you know, she's very unassuming. During the whole congratulatory, you know, Sylvia Garcia wins, she wasn't anywhere to be seen. People were like, you know, that's how she operates.
She moved on to the next race?
Yeah, she was already fielding phone calls in the parking lot, right. saying, I can be there on Monday.
Right.
No, she's taking a break, and I think a lot of people would say it's a well-deserved break because she has been working hard. But, yeah, I mean, you know, from what I understand, she's an up-and-comer, so, you know, you're gonna hear her name a lot.
Senator-elect Garcia, when she gets there, it's not like she can do nothing, right? I mean, she can still vote and speak on the floor. And
she can vote. And
she's just not moving any bills of her own.
Well,
she can amend.
They're not going to have her name on them.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, but the power of amendment
exactly.
is really strong here. Yeah. You know, you can, you know, strike everything below the caption and insert the following. You know, you just wrote your own bill.
And she said that she's been working with the people that supported her already. You know, the Houston delegation, the Democrats that were on her side, you know, I guess not looking too far forward after the election, but at least talking about, hey, if we do, and what can we do? So I think that's where we are now. Hmm.
And the overall makeup of the Senate, does her being there really change things?
No, I mean, it'll be back to where it was, 2 years ago. You know, the House changed a little bit from 102 Republicans and 48 Democrats to now 95 and 55. The Senate's still 19, I guess 11 until she gets there, and it'll be 1912 when she does get there. So it's the same
partisan
component that it was. It does have one more woman in it, you know. Yeah. So 50% of the population and 20% of the elected class, you know, they're on their way, I guess.
All right. Well, before we move on, like you heard at the opening of this podcast, and we're doing a little sponsored audible.com promotion. And so I have to tell everyone.
I like the guy holding the gun to his head. That's great. That's a nice effect.
If you buy
what they say, or we'll shoot Reeve.
If you like listening to spoken things, which clearly you do, you can get a free audio book download and a 30-day free trial by going to audibletrial.com/tribcast. And if you get a free book, I think the...
We should get Goldenthroat to read his book into Audible.
I don't know what that means, but I agree.
Jay Root, him of the Golden Voice, to read. He should read Oops.
Do that.
Yeah.
In the meantime, I would recommend The Brief and Wondrous Life of Oscar Wilde, just because I think the guy that reads that does a really great job. I forget who it is.
It's a great book.
Is that, what's his name?
Well, it's Juno Diaz wrote it.
Juno Diaz wrote it.
But the guy that reads it is just terrific. So download that. Supports us. Thank you. Let's move on to some fun news.
That's a way to diss a sponsor, isn't it?
Sorry, Audible.
This is the first go around, man, plugging something. Give me a concern.
I don't think Audible execs are necessarily listening to this too closely.
Well, not anymore.
Yeah. Well, I think they gave up. They fell asleep during the poll part.
Audible on line one.
Right. But they will love this Penny story.
Wow, you really built this up now.
Yeah, so why... Why is it a felony to steal a penny in Texas?
Because pennies are very important.
Well, theft, we don't condone theft at all, but it seems like pennies should be all right, I think.
Last session, a bunch of lawmakers wanted to make it easier for prosecutors to go after metal thieves, especially copper thieves and aluminum thieves.
These are not just like thieves that are fans of hardcore bands.
Yeah, right. They're stealing Stratocasters.
Anyway, the old law said that if you steal something worth less than $20,000 and it's made up of at least 50% copper, the penalty moves up to a felony. They changed the law last session and got rid of the 50% threshold. So if something is worth less than $20,000 and you steal it and it has any copper in it, it's a felony. And so after they passed it, the Texas District and County Attorneys Association pointed out and had a lot of fun at seminars making jokes about this, that a penny is technically 2.5% copper. So this law has technically made stealing a penny a felony.
So a copper penny only has 2.5% copper?
Yeah. The rest, I think, is zinc.
you just blew Ross's mind.
Sorry.
That's the takeaway.
That's right. Zinc for your thoughts.
So penny theft is a felony. And the other joke that's been going around is another problem along with copper theft is people going into convenience stores and stealing 6-packs and 12-packs of beer. And
that's against the law.
And under this law, technically, prosecutors have joked about increasing it to a felony by charging them with theft of aluminum.
Ah, that's great, because there's more aluminum in a 6-pack of beer than there is copper in a penny, right?
Yes.
How about that?
So there's an effort of afoot to turn this around.
A 6-pack of 12 ounces would be a Class C. Tall boys would be a Class B.
So if you want to stay out of jail, steal bottles.
Exactly.
Are all the kids listening?
Right. Audible's not going to like this.
This is going really well.
Somewhere Evan is cringing.
So this session, Representative Kleinschmidt has come out with a bill to fix this goof. And
why?
He just is annoyed.
Why him,
by it.
I guess.
He thinks you ought to be able to steal pennies?
Let's get this right.
Tim Kleinschmidt thinks you should be able to steal pennies.
He's not the one that made this mistake in the first
place. No, he didn't. He just was annoyed when he learned about it, pretty much. And he's a lawyer, and he's actually handled some copper theft cases years ago. And he just said that... He just felt like it's bad if the law is that confusing and that broad and isn't really giving people a good sense of what should be what's considered criminal behavior.
Does he think that bill is going to get through the process, or is it too contentious?
Right now, it's been referred to a committee and hasn't gotten any more sponsors or anything. no one's come out against it. He seemed a little surprised that I was even writing about it. he didn't understand what the big deal was. And I said, the big deal is it's a felony to steal pennies.
If it's interesting enough to get you irked enough to file a bill about it, it's probably interesting yeah. enough to make a story, right?
I think he just viewed it as like a technical change, but right. I just found it funny.
I think the copper theft storyline in Friday Night Lights would have been pretty entertaining if it had been more penny-centric. you were also covering a somewhat more substantive thing this week with over the
he just incidentally he's got a mad skills at insulting people. It's great.
Well, it's, you know, something less technical.
You
could argue that it's less substantive, I guess. There was some dispute over at the governor's mansion.
Yeah, last week the Texas Legislative Black Caucus was having a reception at the governor's mansion, and some of the lawmakers who were going to the event were a little disturbed to find out that they had to go through a background check to get into the mansion. Sylvester Turner, who was hosting the event, said he only went through with it because he was hosting the event.
What's in the background check?
They get your driver's license info, and they basically check if there are any warrants out on you, is most the main thing. Helen Giddings, Donna Dukes, and Harold Dutton all decide not to go rather than go through the background check. And they all just seemed annoyed. A lot of people at first, and some of the coverage even suggested that this was a racial thing because they were all black lawmakers, but it just happened to be a African-American focused event. And they weren't upset, as far as I could tell, they weren't upset because they were black and having to go through this background check. They were upset because they were lawmakers and have clearance to, you know, be on the House floor and everything. And they were kind of disturbed by the fact that that isn't good enough to get into the governor's mansion.
Membership has its privileges, right?
Right. And so they, the head of DPS, Steve McCraw, said that, you know, it is kind of a weird policy and didn't...
He used stronger language than that, right?
Well, Tuesday at a hearing, a few days after first testifying about it, a special hearing Tuesday, he said it was a stupid policy and we've changed it, any questions? And that was basically his entire testimony.
And so are people thankful? Were they happy with the change?
Yeah, but both...
Did people just storm the governor's mansion? Party right. at the governor's mansion.
Both Sylvester Turner and Jim Pitts thanked him and it kind of implied they thought this was a good move. The strange thing was, though, according to DPS, this policy's been around for like 10 years.
Hmm. Did they just start enforcing it?
I've asked that like 5 times, and they said, no, we've always enforced it. I don't...
They're skittish as cats. I mean, they were watching the mansion. They were guarding the mansion when an arsonist burned it down, and they never have found the arsonist. So they're a little sensitive on the subject of security at the mansion, and they've, you know...
Yeah,
probably completely reasonably gone to overkill, you know?
Yeah, I'm not sure if it was maybe more... they were maybe more aggressive about the background check, or maybe more, it made it more obvious that they were doing this, and maybe lawmakers hadn't realized in the past. But all the lawmakers who were upset about this, they said they weren't aware that this was being done before, and they said they'd been to the governor's mansion before.
Right.
For, you know, the governor has had a sort of holiday press reception at the governor's mansion. I think everyone had to get background checked, but of course the press is full of criminals.
I would absolutely background check the press.
Yeah.
Holy cow, let's not be stupid here.
All right, while we still have a few minutes, let's quickly check in with Julian on the sequester and what it means for Texas and our safety and security.
Not good, actually. Depends on who you talk to. But yeah, yesterday, on Monday.
But nobody will get in the mansion.
Yeah. On Monday, DHS Secretary Napolitano sent a letter to the governor's office saying, hey, this is what these budget cuts mean for Texas. We're talking $6 million in FEMA grants that are going to be slashed. 25% of the Coast Guard is going to be gone as far as their presence on the Texas waterways. I think 15% of the Coast Guard's air presence is going to be gone. And Ross, you can chime in on this because you're from the border. You knew what wait times were back in the day and how frustrating they are to come over from Juarez.
Yeah.
When we say back in the day, how long are we talking?
You know, decades and decades ago.
Those horse buggies, I mean, they...
right. Yeah, your horse would have to be fed while you were sitting there in line.
So this means about 2,700 CBP agents across the board getting slashed or furloughed for 2-3 weeks at a time, 5,000 fewer Border Patrol agents. And a lot of folks, Congressman Henry Cuellar sent out the copy of the letter because he said he wanted people to... I don't think he was disagreeing... He wasn't getting in the fight between the governor and the federal government. He was just saying, look, it means more than just security. Obviously, security is important, but those folks on the border are real focused on trade. El Paso wait times could reach 3 hours. Laredo wait times could reach 6 hours.
Oof.
And that is the busiest inland port in the country. There's a lot of trade. I think $292 billion just last year in two-way trade at that port.
Nice time to knock out an audiobook while you're waiting.
Yeah exactly. Or, you know, or actually...
Yeah, 6 hours, try Herman yeah. Wouk. Well,
I think what people are actually doing are sitting there, you know, chewing their nails, thinking, Jesus, you know, all these goods that I'm trying to get up north are just either dying or, you know, just speaking logistically, it's just, right. I mean, it's going to increase prices. Or think about when gas prices went up, everything else, you know, that everything else went up in price.
Well, that's
as well.
Another thing. And they're sitting there, you know, burning gas. They're,
yeah.
You know,
it's what it boils down to.
Mental concern as well, right?
Mm-hmm. It's, right. Yeah, that is. And, you know, this this also, due to these cuts the Fed's released, you ask, it's anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 what they call criminal aliens, low-risk criminal aliens that were in detention centers. They did it, and they didn't warn any of the state governments. They didn't say where they were going to release them. They didn't say how many they were going to release them. And according to the House Judiciary Committee, they're going to release a few thousand more before the end of the month. So
Perry called this a federally sponsored jailbreak.
Yeah, he did. And he said nice. This was, you know, he said while Americans are, you know, used to the grandstanding associated with, you know, these budget cuts, I mean, this is pretty bad. And I think a lot of people would probably side with the governor on this one. It's like, you know, if DHS is going to do this anyway, you know, at least give the state governments a heads up. There's been a lot of issues about, you know, releasing people and, you know, releasing them in El Paso and sending them to Juarez, where Juarez was a violent city. But these folks are just – they're not being returned anywhere. They're just being released in, you know,
Is there any
States.
Detail available yet on where they're being released and what kind of people are being released? That, or is it just a number at this point?
I think it's just a number. I haven't seen anything so far today, but the House Judiciary Committee is calling a hearing, and they're saying that they're going to drill down and try to get some specifics on, you know, where and how many in that particular area.
Is there any silver lining to any of this? What would Bradley Cooper find in this story?
I really don't know. I mean, it's, you know, you talk to the members of the congressional delegation, and, you know, the deadline was Friday. I think they stopped working early Wednesday last week.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, what happens? When do they go back to work? What's the future? I don't know. If I could predict that, then
you wouldn't be here.
No,
yeah.
I wouldn't. I'd be out stealing pennies because I know that I'm not going to get busted for them.
That's right. All right. Bottled beers.
Well, on that note, that little endorsement of theft, I would like to thank Aman, Julian, Ross, our producer, Todd, Audible.com, and once again,
which
that
is practically
link
a steal.
Maybe you could listen to Steal This Book by Abby Hoffman.
The link is audibletrial.com/Tribcast. And of course, if you have questions or comments about all the changes to the Tribcast this week, you can email tribcast@texastribune.org. I'd also like to thank Shiny Ribs, who I like to think of as sort of the quest love to my Jimmy Fallon. You can catch him.
You can think of it however you want. Reeves private world.
You can catch him all over the state. He's going to be in Houston, Denton, Dallas, Austin, and Bryan this month. I guess that's it. Thanks for listening.
All right. Texas talking.
Speak of the pompatus of love.